In the now grim, but somehow still glorious expanse of the Imperial Palace, in its deepest depths, the custodians dwell amid corridors echoing with the weight of millennia's worth of history. Their realm is that of the Sanctum Imperialis, a bastion shrouded in shadows of gold and the ancient defences of thousands of years of reconstruction. A fortress where the remnants of humanity's glory are shielded from the encroaching darkness. Within the solemn confines of the throne room, the custodians maintain their ceaseless watch, their vigilant gazes fixed upon the golden throne and the enigmatic figure who continues to occupy. But to describe them as mere guardians does not do justice to the silent sentinels of the Emperor's legacy, his silent enforcers in a world consumed by decay. Throughout the galaxy, humanity's existence is a life of suffocating authoritarian rule and mass cultural and general ignorance. Some worlds do not even believe in the existence of Xenos, simply due to the fact they have never seen any evidence of them. And this is something that is continually repeated to us throughout the crime series set within Varan Gantua upon the world of Alecto. Now, the Emperor's Astartes are another example of something few humans will ever lay eyes upon. And their extremely small numbers set against the scale of the galaxy means that for the vast majority of humans, the Space Marines are something that they will only hear about through Imperial propaganda and never actually bear witness to, save for those who enlist in the Imperial Guard and may see the privilege of witnessing the Sons of the Emperor wage war across the war zones of the galaxy. But the point is, for many more members of the Imperial citizenry, there are figures who we may be very familiar with, the Custodes, the Astartes, Inquisitors. For ordinary humanity, many of these figures are entirely mythological. They are spoken about in stories, tales, fables told by preachers, but undoubtedly many will have doubts as to the real, true existence of such things. So above the Astartes, there are these figures who exist who many will probably not hear about, and even if they do, will not necessarily believe they exist. The Custodes are spoken of perhaps in the context of the Emperor, but you also have the Grey Knights, who few if any really know of their existence. They're so rare and elite that even among the privileged members of the Imperial forces, they're extraordinarily rare to encounter. Whereas the Adeptus Custodes are the companions, the guardians of the Emperor himself. It's a role that has always transcended military duty, and for those clad in the golden Auramite, it is an all-consuming embodiment of duty coded into their core. The Custodes emerged at the crucible of the Emperor's vision for humanity's new era of dominance among the stars. They began to appear at the end of unification, and in the early days of the Great Crusade, their primary purpose was twofold: to serve as the Emperor's most trusted bodyguards, and to safeguard the sanctity of Terra, the cradle of humanity, the seat of Imperial power. Additionally though, the Custodes acted as those whom the Emperor could speak and discuss directly with, something he had little opportunity to do with many ordinary individuals. And although others have been produced later, the original Custodes are said to have each been worked upon and overseen by the Emperor himself. During the Great Crusade, the Custodians were entrusted with delivering important messages or artifacts on behalf of the Emperor, and that is a duty they continue to fulfill today, speaking with the authority of the Master of Mankind. Some among the Custodians claim to sense his guidance during meditations, and they interpret his will to their other comrades without necessarily attributing this to divine intervention. These Custodians, known as Emissaries Imperatus, form groups to discuss and meditate upon the Emperor's guidance, acting upon its directives throughout the Imperium. It is also said that, like the Primarchs, each Custodes is created using the gene stock of the Emperor himself, no matter how minuscule that is. And through this, the Custodians were then sculpted into these paragons of martial prowess and unwavering loyalty. This can often be seen as giving the Custodes a lack of free will. Some even consider them robotic. For while the Astartes appear to retain their independence, as is seen in the traitors, it has always traditionally been considered near to impossible for Custodes to consciously turn upon one another, as it's genetically coded into their very being to remain loyal to the end. However, being twisted and manipulated by the forces in the darkest corners of the galaxy can always upend such grounded physical restrictions. Essentially, though, each custodian is a pinnacle of human potential, enhanced both physically and mentally to heights beyond the reach of ordinary humans. As was the Emperor, they are clad in Auramite, the golden armour, which is not purely for aesthetic qualities. For Auramite is a substance stronger and lighter than any other alloy, and is said to be near quantum inert, making it an effective material for the use of psychic abilities, but also the manipulation of warp energy. Which is why the Emperor chose this for his own armour, but it was also designed for the custodians who would surround him. While the Astartes are deployed to wage wars across the galaxy, a custodian's duties extend beyond combat, encompassing intelligence, diplomacy, surgical strike missions, not to mention the eternal watch over the Golden Throne and the Emperor, where they have largely remained since the close of the Heresy. Throughout the 10,000 years since those dark days, the custodians have maintained their vigil of guardianship that they would not break from until such time as the Great Rift tore through the galaxy and see the return of the 13th Primarch. The casting of entire sectors of the galaxy into darkness caused the custodians to realise that while they must always maintain the vigil over the Emperor, they also needed to step out into the galaxy, and so have been more proactive during the Era Indomitus. Yet for all their martial prowess and unwavering dedication, the custodians are not without their vulnerabilities, and wherever a brother of the custodians falls, their loss is keenly felt. Not only for the irreplaceable warrior it represents, but for the breach it signifies in the Imperium's defences. As the Imperium ever stands staring into the abyss that beckons its collapse, beset on all sides by enemies without and within, the burden upon the custodians in defending the Emperor of all mankind and the throne world of Terra grows ever heavier. And despite 10,000 years having passed, just as it does upon some of the oldest Astartes chapters, the shadow of the Horus Heresy is cast long over the custodians. They can never escape their failure to prevent the greatest betrayal in Imperial history and the devastating consequences that resulted. They are forever scarred by the memory of their failure to protect the Emperor from his own sons at a level that is far deeper and more fundamental than any others could possibly understand. Still, the custodians remain ever vigilant against the spectre of this kind of treachery, and finally now in the increasingly unstable era of M41, they find themselves thrust once more into the forefront of the Imperium's defence. The emergence of new and ever more pervasive threats, ancient enemies, and the division caused by the Cicatrix Maledictum makes their part in defending humanity never more vital. And now, as they begin to step out beyond the hallowed ground of the ancient homeworld, and despite their numbers being few, their resolve is unyielding. For they are the Adeptus Custodes, gene-crafted by methodology unknown to any outside of the most advanced and heavily protected gene rights upon Terra, their endless task coded into their very DNA. Consequently, it is not merely by his will alone they act, they are compelled to defend humanity to their last dying breath. The ancient origins of the Adeptus Custodes remain unsurprisingly shrouded in mystery. Historical accounts hint at their existence dating back to even before the period of unification. In M41, the process to recover and reconstruct the history of the Imperium continues in the Era Indomitus, with fragments of the vast galactic history of humanity being continually sought and retrieved by the Ultramarines Primarch and Lord Commander of the Imperium, Robute Gilliman, to which his historians have found ever more numerous mentions of the Emperor accompanied by these towering warriors adorned in gold. Now, of course, Gilliman himself will well remember this, but such details may seem not readily apparent to us or to any members of the Imperium in M41. It's a reminder that within the Imperium itself, it is ever true that a dense fog of obfuscation surrounds not just the period known as the Dark Age of Technology, but indeed around the bulk of human history since M30, even major events such as the Heresy itself have become, in the 10,000 years since it concluded, little more than myth, with few other than the most privileged and advanced researchers of the Adeptus Terra able to have any real comprehension of what took place in those times. The Emperor was believed to have inherited a vast knowledge of gene forging from the era known as Old Night, and undoubtedly other periods earlier in human history. This he utilized along with accumulated genetomantic lore, which was one of his adjacent goals during the Unification Wars, to then proceed and recruit and secure any and all remaining scientists of value, and specifically those capable of understanding highly advanced genetic work in the aftermath of the complete collapse of human civilization during Old Night, the Age of Strife. Using this wealth of knowledge, paired with his own unimaginably advanced intellect, he was able to create the first transhuman masterworks, the Custodes. Although largely unmentioned, it seems almost inevitable that Malkador and whatever existed of his Sigillite Order would have contributed additional benefits towards this great project, including, of course, the Primarchs and the Astartes that would follow. However, any such truths will likely remain for all time unknowable, the lost details of such matters hidden beyond the reach of modern scholars, data cores that are broken or lost to time. Accounts of the Custodians' role during the Heresy are similarly obscure. Scant records detail their actions from the perspective of those in M41, with even figures such as Constantine Valdor, the first leader of the Custodes, only really speculated to in how they played a pivotal role. Of course, we know differently, but Imperial legend suggests that their involvement in conflicts such as Prospero and the Imperial Palace, but separating myth from reality is a very daunting task 10,000 years after the fact. Even the Primarchs were clear on the separation between the Custodes and themselves, the Astartes. Rogel Dorn described the Custodes as a breed apart, born of a different tradition and different technologies, products of a different age. Though their aims and loyalties would mesh with those of Dorn, the warriors of the Legio Custodes are a different lineage entirely. They are and were the last and greatest warriors of their time, the martial pinnacle of the Unification era, eclipsed now by the epoch of the Primarchs and their gene sons. But following the Heresy, the Custodians underwent profound changes. They were devastated by their failure to protect the Emperor during his duel with Horus, quite literally in terms of their numbers, and many Custodians remained within the Imperial Palace, as it was entirely necessary. They still feared there could be further reprisals against the Emperor, even though really the forces of Chaos had been shattered. The Custodians remained cloaked in mourning and haunted by their shame. Their duty to the Golden Throne now became paramount. It was an enduring reminder of their past and a solemn vow for the future. But replenishment of their number was, of course, critical. Recruitment into the ranks of the Custodians, though, is a process so complex that it very much mirrors their nature. To be successful as a Custodes aspirant requires more than is seen in the Space Marines, a strong foundation of unbreakable human material, for they who will become vessels of the essence of the Emperor himself, each Custodes carries an aura of the Master of Mankind surrounding them. This itself is often enough to command respect and awe from all devout warriors, as they embody what are comparable by some to the Primarchs, and for the Custodes, a brotherhood of demigods designed for the ultimate war, a war which one could make the case they failed in the ultimate test. But in terms of their creation, to describe those who would become Custodes in the same terms as Astartes is not really an objective comparison. Prospective Custodians begin their journey as infant sons born of the noble houses of Terror, which is a testament to the prestige associated with their calling. They will be taken in infancy and undergo extensive testing. If deemed acceptable, they may undergo further genetic metamorphosis, with earlier initiation increasing the likelihood of success. But Custodes applicants are taken at such an incredibly young age, to compare them to the process Astartes go with is not really comparable. When infants are put forth in the process to become a Custodes, the grand spectacle of their induction is a great affair. It's often witnessed by vast crowds, which underscores the reverence bestowed upon them by Terra's high society, and reasonably so, as they will either potentially meet an early demise or functional immortality. The intricacies of their creation process, though, remain veiled, known only to the select few within the Imperial hierarchy, and this is conducted within secluded gilded laboratories on Terra. The transformation into a Custodian is orchestrated by skilled chirurgeons and bioalchemists. The whole process is an extremely clandestine affair and occurs beyond the scrutiny of even the highest offices of terror. Likely the laboratories and theatres in which custodies are produced may be unrecognisable to any from the era of M41, for these are likely pristine locations that look more reminiscent of the Golden Age than of the Age of the Imperium. But despite their extended lifespans, the custodians have never exceeded approximately 10,000 warriors, and that is often attributed to a stringent selection process. For each worthy aspirant, thousands will be deemed inadequate. But unlike the transformation of Space Marines, which takes place through a comparatively unsophisticated gene seed implantation, the process of becoming a custodian occurs at a more mystically profound level. It potentially is touching upon the aspirant's very soul, quite literally. And this is no artistic exaggeration. Much of the technology that originates from the Dark Age of Technology is so advanced that none can fathom truly how it is possible. And as the old adage goes, anything sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic. And this is very much an accurate description of the process used to create the custodies, and likely the Primarchs for that matter. Because becoming a custodian transcends the physical and spiritual realms. But before I'm dragged away to be burned as a heretic, I will move on. Ultimately, should they be successful in this profound journey of body and soul upon ascension into the ranks of the custodies, the gene-enhanced aspirant is bestowed with a blade known as a misericordia. These have great significance, for while they may appear ornamental, its micromolecular dissonator spirit imbues it with the capacity to cut through near anything. It is far more than a mere weapon, as its origins trace back to the darkest epochs of Terran's tyranny, where warlords ruled with sheer force. These oppressors wielded blades of the same title, and they were the symbols of their despotic reign. With the advent of the Emperor's Wars of Unification, the Custodians reclaimed the term, transforming it into a symbol of justice and righteous judgment. No longer would the Misericordia represent tyranny. Instead, it became the instrument of the Emperor's will, empowering its bearer to mete out judgment upon those who defied his rule. In the aftermath of the Emperor's fall, the Misericordia took on additional significance. It became a tool of vengeance against those who betrayed the Emperor. With each strike against a traitor's heart, it is said that a minuscule measure of revenge is exacted on behalf of the Emperor himself. Thus, while custodians retain the discretion to carry their blade or not, it is a rare sight indeed to see them face the hated heretic Astartes without them at the ready. In the years since the heresy, the custodians remained burdened by this weight of eternal shame that they had carried since that day. In the black cloaks that they draped themselves solemnly in, this embodied the suffocating darkness that engulfed their once proud order. And in the restructuring of the Imperium that followed, its strength waned. The Astartes splintered now, divided into smaller chapters, and while the custodies very slowly recovered their numbers, they remained focused upon the Emperor on his eternal golden throne. As the Imperium reached the 41st millennium, after many millennia of mourning, they shed these black cloaks, seeking redemption in the crucible of battle, desperate to cleanse their tarnished honour with bloodshed as the dying Emperor's light flickered. Now, in the era Indomitus, with chaos swelling throughout the galaxy, the custodians are consumed by a zealous defence now turned aggression, vowing to annihilate any threat to Terra's sanctity, foremost among them the abyssal legions of chaos. Behind the colossal doors of the Sanctum Imperialis, many whispered covert operations are planned and executed. While it may have seemed otherwise to those ignorant to their ever-present ability, the custodians were far from idle. They waged wars unseen, refined defences against all conceivable threats, and crushed deluded crusades of human despots who imagined themselves to claim the throne of terror. Worth to remember that throughout the history of the Imperium, and despite the many threats of the Xenos throughout the galaxy, one of humanity's biggest enemies is, of course, itself. So when Gilliman miraculously emerged from what many had assumed was a certain death only in an eternal stasis, he returned through controversial sacrificial rites and ancient machinations. His resurrection promised a new era of hope and an ascension for the Imperium. But when traitor legions besieged the Imperial Palace during the Heresy's climax, Gilliman and his Ultramarines too far to defend their father's realm, so it was perhaps fate that ensured the Primarch and the 13th held a common shame that the custodes and themselves could relate to build a newfound strength together upon. Gilliman vowed that all must avoid repeating these past errors, and as the Ultramarine's quotation states, our presence remakes the past. Witnessing the encroaching shadows swallowing the Imperium, he would embark upon a desperate crusade, navigating twisted, blood-soaked paths that led him to Terra itself. Welcomed with ceremonious pomp, Gilliman was granted audience with the Emperor, now reinstated as Lord Commander and Imperial Regent by Terra's High Lords. But no one knows what Gilliman saw or spoke during this audience with the Emperor. Outwardly, he was as composed as ever, but his spirit seemed broken at the sight of his father's desolation. In the period after this consultation, Gilliman saw the depths of decay that had festered and consumed the Imperium in his absence. He swiftly dismantled bureaucratic barriers that were suffocating and strangling the Imperium's defences against the encroaching enemies who were numerous and everywhere. Amidst these reforms, the Sol system was ravaged by the echoing tempests of the Great Rift, and Terra endured an empiric onslaught the likes of which had rarely been seen. Such was the shockwaves caused, it temporarily extinguished the light of the Astronomicon during what became known as the Noctis Aeternae, and wrought havoc and misery from the planet's highest spires to its deepest crypts. The custodes grappled with riots, cult insurrections, and the deranged frenzies of desperate souls driven to madness and worse. Beneath the Imperial Palace's shadows, wardens confronted newly unleashed horrors as ancient weakened sigils crumbled, unleashing timeless nightmares of the Immaterium. Yet, as is ever true of the darkness in the far future, new horrors awaited. Seeking to sever the Imperium's head, hordes of cornate demons breached reality's skin, assaulting the Lion's Gate in what became recorded by Imperial scholars as the Second Battle of Terror. The crimson tide of howling demonic fiends ploughed towards the Emperor's Sanctum like an unstoppable tsunami of warp energy. The only thing that could stop this was a desperate defence led by Gilliman and Captain General Trajan Valoris. In scenes that were reminiscent of the final stand made during the war in the Webway so long ago. The golden warriors of Valoris, clad in their Auramite, clashed with Quorn minions in a display of brutal close combat not seen since the horrors unleashed during the Siege of Terra. Through a significant sacrifice and raging fury of duty, the Imperials prevailed, crushing the demonic onslaught, but at a steep toll in losses. While in many ways this battle was just a painful but very standard engagement against the forces of darkness, the Battle of Lionsgate laid bare a grim reality. Terra's defences had once again crumbled under the relentless assault of the Dark Gods. And so this would see Valoris and Gilliman decree a drastic amendment to the Custodes' role. To stand here and wait for the enemy was no longer a path that suited any. In the new era for the Imperium, while the Imperial Palace would always remain guarded, Custodes extended their reach beyond the stars, guided by auguries and the eyes of the Emperor, who expend every molecule of their remaining energy in hunting down and exterminating all threats to Terra's security and sanctity. Shield companies would disperse across the galaxy, from the fringes of the Imperium Nihilus to the warp-ravaged corridors leading to Terra itself, all vowing to safeguard their sacred charge. Some joined Gilliman's Indomitus Crusade, ferrying Primaris reinforcements to beleaguered chapters, while others garrisoned the Sol system's outer defences. Yet amidst their cosmic vigil, the Custodes waged shadow wars against hidden enemies, and their very presence echoed the zenith days of the Great Crusades once more. For millennia, the Adeptus Custodes have maintained their vigilant watch over the sanctified precincts of the Golden Throne. In this time, not a solitary foe breached the hallowed confines of the Sanctum Imperialis. This mantle of responsibility weighs heavy for those who stand upon the sacred soil of Terra. They are the ultimate sentinels, not merely observant over the grand portals leading to the Emperor's Chamber, but also across the vast expanse of the Imperial Palace, a continent-spanning realm where uncalculable billions traverse its labyrinthine sprawl. Over 10,000 years, what remained of the palace in the aftermath of the heresy now encompasses an innumerable quantity of bastions, cathedrals, arsenals, dungeons, habdomes, tribunals, repositories, laboratories, and more than can be reasonably listed. Suffice to say, this is a formidable expanse to safeguard indeed. And so it falls upon the Adeptus Custodes alone to determine who merits an audience with the God Emperor. Unsurprisingly, it is a privilege rarely, if ever, accommodated. They oversee the massed throngs of supplicants and petitioners that swarm through the palace corridors. They continue to stand as unmovable, ever vigilant statues, scanning and assessing for any marks, signs, hints of Xenos contamination, or those with otherwise heretical inclination, who might seek to attempt an inevitably pitiable assault upon its formidable defences. They also preside over the grim ritual of sustaining the Emperor and the Astronomicon, wherein thousands of psykers relinquish their life essence daily, one of the more disturbing and by some measures questionable practices that occur within the walls of Terror. But the less said about the Guild of Navigators' quarters, the better. The Custodes will stand guard over all of the most critical avenues and corners of the Imperial Domain, even down into its deepest recesses within the Imperial Palace. Custodians here keep vigil over long-forgotten, immense vaults that have been sealed for longer than they have existed, where ancient enigmas from the unmentionable Dark Age of Technology continue to exist, sealed forever, unless authorized by the Emperor himself, something which seems unlikely to happen anytime soon. They will dispatch vigilant shield companies to continually survey the defences of the Sol system, purging any potential threat to the sanctity of Holy Terror, no matter how negligible. They will engage in continuous blood games, which subject themselves to full live trials of invasions and assassinations, thus honing their defences to ever greater levels of resilience. And these can often result in terminal sanctions of Imperial servants and officers at any level of authority, for those who do not meet the standards expected of them in fulfilling their duties to Terror can expect immediate judgment and be sent for permanent servitor conversion to better serve the Imperium than they did in their own life. Custodes regard the transient mortals who bustle at their feet with a cold indifference and maintain a wary distance from even the most devout space marines, mindful that past fallibility could recur at almost any time. This is the discipline that they are forced to endure, and this extends even among their own, for the Custodians allow no respite when it comes to personal introspection. Their Captain General, while not a member of, has in the past advised or interjected with the authority of the High Lords of Terror in an advisory role, yet also wielding the full authority of the Lex Ultima. Whenever the Custodes have sought to exert this authority bound solely to the Emperor's sovereignty, few would dare to speak against them, for they marshal the defences of Terror Eternal. As for the actual structure of the 10,000, it can appear simplistic or unnecessarily complex from different human perspectives. When choosing to disclose their organisation to other Imperial bodies, their hierarchy can appear intricate and stratified, yet much of this is steeped in traditional deliberate obfuscation. In reality, the Adeptus Custodes employ a resilient yet entirely straightforward system to manage their forces. In many respects, it is among the simplest of designs throughout the Imperium. But as with all aspects of the Custodians, the intricacies of their framework, their deployment and governance are veiled in secrecy, as befits such an institution dedicated to supreme security. Outside of its ranks, even those operating in close proximity to the Senatorum Imperialis and the highest echelons of the Divisio Militaris can only grasp superficial understandings of the Custodes' workings. What can be discerned externally is that the Custodes stand again apart from other branches such as the Astra Militarum or the Astartes. And this divergence is very fitting, because for the Custodes, like the other elements of the Talons of the Emperor, they're best described really as a paramilitary rather than a conventional strategic force, which might seem strange and not particularly fitting, but it is primarily due to the fact that the Custodes are not designed for waging nor winning wars of vast scale and attrition, these are matters for the Imperial Guard. The custodes are constrained by duties of strategic defence, protection, enforcement, and surgical strikes. So it is by design that each custodes wields unparalleled authority over virtually any other organisation in the Imperium. No agent can command a custodian, even esteemed figures like the High Lords of Terra. And although it has at times been the subject of some debate, it's largely considered true that even Lord Commander Gilliman may only request their aid, never compel it. Again though, this is an actual discrepancy in references, so it remains debatable on which side you want to come down on in that argument. In the relentless warfare of the Indomitus era, the custodes remain as timeless as the stone of the Imperial Palace, just as it is inscrutable to any outsiders. Each custodes lays claim to a given name, often drawn from ancient Terra's tapestry of kings, tyrants, gods, and legends. Whether this signifies humour or deliberate irony on the part of the Emperor, given the custodian's role, remains a matter best left unexplored. The true names they once bore are likely erased by the process of their creation, but legend holds that each custodian accrues a long list of additional names and titles bestowed by the Emperor over centuries for their deeds, history, and character. And while they are often seen as unmovable objects, statuesque sentinels, or terrifying destroyers when they unleash their wrath upon the enemies of humanity, each custodian guard is a harbinger of destruction. Precision strikes incomparable combat prowess, leaving a trail of enemy corpses in their wake. Every custodes is capable of killing enemies many times their own number, and it's very often questionable just what it would take to kill an individual custodes. Side note, this is one of those things which is somewhat inconsistent within the lore. But technically speaking, it should take a massive amount of firepower and force to bring down a custodes, for they stand as equals to very few, even when stacked against the elite warriors of the Astartes and the legions of enemies faced by humanity. But returning to their composition, unlike conventional forces, custodian squads lack what would be considered standard formal membership. That is, in the sense that they do not belong to, say, a regiment, a squad, a chapter. They do, of course, have their own specific roles which they can be a part of and adhere to, which we will come to, but in terms of just those around them, they can be quite fluid, and this allows a custodes to move freely between organisational units before each new campaign or battle as they deem necessary. This is because each member of the custodian guard is an entirely perfect killing machine. None among their number would question or expect anything other than unmatched expertise, and so they are able to support one another seamlessly in any operations. Their fighting styles are entirely individualistic, but they are able to apply themselves to almost any situation when armed with their iconic guardian spears, sentinel blades, and storm shields. A custodian wields weapons of immense ancient power, and most are capable of cleaving through any foe with ease while weathering the most devastating attacks. They can also call upon their ancient dreadnought constructs and land raider battle tanks to carry them to war, bringing a terrifying combination of demigod-like warriors and imperial war engines of a classification and quality generally unseen in M41. Custodian wardens are recognised by their ceremonial robes and are veterans who have served for many centuries. They wield heavy-bladed castellan axes with deadly precision. Alaris custodians are clad in terminator plates specific to the custodes. These individuals are handpicked for their aggressive nature, and all will relish the chance to plunge deep into the deadliest battles with an almost immortal, senseless, raging fury. This rampant desire to slaughter is only leashed by their own willpower, lest they be compared more like the heretics of the 12th Legion. When deployed, Alaris will scatter enemy lines, eliminating key targets near instantaneously and sowing irrevocable chaos before the full might of the Adeptus Custodes descends upon their foes. The approach of the Alaris is a victory secured through, some might say, a beautiful balance of martial skill and strategy, but instead one of relentless and unstoppable aggression paired with surgical precision. At the very helm of the Custodian Guard stands the Captain General, Commander of the 10,000, and they stand directly under the Emperor's oversight. This will always be a singularly esteemed officer in the ranks of Imperial history and the creative accomplishments of genetic technology by Imperial gene rights. Beneath the Captain General stand tribunes composed of 10 seasoned custodians to form a council of war and imperial policy, and they would advise the Captain General. In ages past, they would hold the rare privilege of even counseling the Emperor himself when needed. When in conference with the Captain General, they will discuss matters of palace security, the Emperor's safety, and such a role is obviously reserved for the elite few. Membership in this council demands a custodian to have earned 10 names and led victorious battles on at least 3 occasions. Further down the hierarchy are the custodian prefects and shield captains. The former was bestowed as a mark of favour by the Emperor to denote veteran custodians, while the latter indicated active field commanders overseeing specific custodies deployments. And each will serve as inspirational leaders with vastly strategic minds. They are fearless champions, each bearing titles which align to their assigned duties. And the Adeptus Custodes, while technically a department of the Adeptus Terror, continue to solely answer to the Emperor and their own internal leaders, which really is very comparable to the Inquisition. Generally, they will reside in what is known as the Tower of Hegemon, which is anchored within the Imperial Palace. This is where most custodians would reside, but the Emperor's personal guard, his companions, will always remain steadfastly by his side. While the custodians, as we said, suffered substantial losses during the heresy, and these dropped as low as 1,000, by the latter period of the 41st millennium, they had restored their ranks to the original strength of 10,000 warriors. But it remains somewhat of an open question as to whether the custodians that exist in M41 are of the quality and individually designed masterworks of the Emperor, who was said to have overseen each custodians originally. However, it should probably be noted that, in terms of a mortal looking at a custodians, the differences between the quality of custodians from those different periods is probably almost impossible to discern. Generally speaking, given their autonomy, the custodians diverge from the typical hierarchical structure seen in other Imperial armed forces, and in this sense, they have very little need for many different rankings. All custodians belong to a caste or a chamber determined by their tactical role. As I mentioned earlier, this is enabling them to more closely associate with specific tasks and groups of custodians that are doing the same thing. The majority of custodians hold a similar status to one another, and so they form informal warrior bands called sodalities. Within these groups, custodians assume various strategic roles based on their strengths and their specialties, whether as jet bike troops, formidable assault units, or just wardens. And their status will be determined by the respect and the honour accorded to them by their peers. It's basically a meritocratic system. And that's very reflective of the custodians' entire approach to their responsibilities and war. But when you get above those smaller groups, you would classify a singular force of custodians as a shield company. And when a larger force is required, multiple shield companies would gather into what is known as a shield host. And this will be led by a captain commander and conclaves of shield captains. And this will boast tens, sometimes hundreds of custodians or more. In terms of their specific fighting styles, it can vary greatly, as we said, but with massive repositories of human, cultural, military and political history theirs alone to study, the custodians learn and practice in the secrets of countless martial arts and subtle disciplines of combat and war. These are termed as katars. Each will have a particular focus, be it marksmanship, close quarter combat technique, esoteric disciplines, and so on. And each can require many centuries of study and practice for a custodian to master. Some custodians are dedicated to one katar, while others seek a broader training across many different disciplines. The highest rank in the custodians, as we said earlier, is the Captain General, and that is akin to a chapter master of the Astartes, but with much greater autonomy. The custodian guard generally organizes itself based around respect rather than blind loyalty, with leaders earning command through admiration of others. And it might be a little bit heretical to say this, but that doesn't feel entirely unlike the Orc methodology to me. So those are the more standardized descriptions for groups of custodians, whether they're deploying on specific missions or in war. But as noted, they also will organize themselves into what are castes or chambers. And I could have dived a little deeper into this, but ultimately it's just their assigned role that they fulfill and other custodians doing the same thing. For example, what are described as the Hykanatoi are the core of the custodian guard. These are really the iconic golden armored warriors, wielding their spears, serving as the Emperor's protectors, and their ranks include the Sentinel Guard, Custodian Guard, and the elite Heteron Guard. By contrast to this, you have what are known as the Thuranatoi. These are shock troops equipped with Terminator armor and potent weaponry like Adrathic weapons. The Cataphractoi are masters of speed and mobility. They will operate things like advanced grav vehicles, jet bikes, using swift responses to different threats. The Ephoroi Chamber engage in covert operations, testing defenses, eliminating threats as directed by the Emperor in the past. The Ephoroi Chamber will engage in covert operations, testing out defenses, eliminating threats, sometimes blurring lines with the Officio Assassinorum, although the idea of a Custodes as a stealthy assassin is pretty hilarious. The Moritoi are interred within dreadnoughts, and those represent the honoured dead who continue to serve. The Dancanatoi are formed during the Heresy, and they persist as stalwart defenders post-conflict. And then you have one of the more simplistically titled Eyes of the Emperor Chamber. These are a quite important chamber, and they are the retired custodians. Now you might say, well, why are they important if they're retired? Well, despite being immortal, all custodies will tire over time, worn down by the attrition of entropy. And it is inescapable even for the custodies. Eventually, they will consider themselves less than adequate for their role. But when a custodes considers themselves inadequate for their role any longer, they will openly admit this, because again, it goes in line with the custodes' outlook of respect, introspection, and so on. Most retired custodes will head out into the galaxy, which is very important, because rather than being on Terra, they are now out there, being vigilant, observing, and reporting any threats that they see, perceive, or hear about to Terra. They could also intervene, but only when necessary to safeguard for the Imperium. And a singular custodes can do a lot out in the galaxy when facing different threats, especially maybe just on human worlds which are destabilizing. And whether operating alone or they may command a network of agents, these individuals will wield fear, respect, reputation, and intellect to enforce compliance. Should they detect any form of danger, they will discreetly inform the Captain General by one means or another, and this could prompt swift and decisive actions by responsive Imperial forces. Even though retired and effectively out of the role of a custodes on Terra, by any reasonable measure, they will still be sharp and resolute. The Eyes of the Emperor consider themselves less than is required than do the duty of protecting the Emperor, but they also refuse to idly watch as danger will loom over the throne. So they will engage in clandestine warfare and manage any and all threats until Terra can respond adequately. Some might use initiative, engaging in their own remote operations, even deploying mercenaries and zealots to achieve their objectives, while others will take a very direct approach, leveraging their own personal skills, politics, and leadership. A millennia of experience have honed these skills, making them formidable adversaries to any who would dare to challenge the Imperium and the Golden Throne. And then, of course, there are those infamous companions, but these we will consider in the next section. The Emperor's Palace on Terra stands as it did since its creation, sprawling across an ancient mountain range that has stood throughout human history. It is a fortress of unparalleled scale and hardened against all external threats. The Adeptus Custodes, tireless and vigilant, guard this colossal bastion against all threats, a duty they have faithfully discharged for millennia now. But once a marvel of engineering and grandeur during the Great Crusade, the palace, of course, underwent that dramatic transformation during the Heresy, and even after was evolved into a fortress of unparalleled strength. Over the millennia, it has grown more bloated and polluted. Its generations of gross indulgence are buried beneath layers of Gothic ornamentation and grim splendour. But despite this arguably grotesque transformation, the custodes remain steadfast in their defence of the location. It's not their place to decide how to design and maintain the aesthetic of the Imperial Palace. Its outermost walls span many thousands of miles, and while its towering spires pierce the atmosphere like the spine of a continental beast, beneath the surface its sublevels extend deep into Terra's bedrock, housing this labyrinth of chambers, vaults, and habitats. But despite its vastness, the custodes will patrol every inch, guarding the sanctums, the armories, those secret vaults. But with the advent of the Great Rift, the once unthinkable invasion of terror in the past 10,000 years has now become a reality, one which they already had to face. And the Custodes remain the defenders of the Sol system, so overseeing its formidable fortifications and vigilance against threats is their singular focus. But while the majority of Custodes are there to maintain constant vigilance over patrols, inspections, surveillance of all those pilgrims and travellers to thwart any potential threats to the palace and the Emperor, there is that smaller group of Custodes known as the Companions. And they are this specific caste or chamber of a 300 strong force who form the direct immediate bodyguard of the Emperor upon his golden throne. And these members of the Custodes undergo meticulous selection by the Captain General. And this is because it is not only a massive responsibility, but also incredibly grueling. Each candidate is extensively scrutinized for their performance in training and battle, alongside qualities like mental acuity and spiritual fortitude. Shielding the Emperor holds the highest importance in the Imperium, and transcends considerations of rank or even veteran status. For those not chosen, they certainly will harbour no resentment, for as a Custodes they understand that the weight of the duty in this role and the exacting perfection required in selection is absolutely essential. But to be tasked with this unending vigil is, as I said, an extremely grueling task. For while they may rotate for brief rest periods, their duty remains purgatorial. Stationed around the Golden Throne in unwavering ranks, they stand poised for battle with a level of readiness for any potential threat, and this ceaseless duty exacts a toll even on demigods of the Adeptus Custodes. Only upon the Captain General's judgment will a companion be rotated out, replaced by a fresh recruit, and it is not uncommon for a senior Custodes to recognise the limits of even Custodian's endurance. Astoran Kalos holds the record, enduring a full century of guardianship before relinquishing his post among the silent ranks. Former companions will often transition to the Aquilan Shields, serving as bodyguards to various esteemed figures within the Imperium, and this includes the High Lords of Terror, Guild Masters, Lords Militant. Their role extends their own vow to protect the Emperor by safeguarding vital assets of his Imperium, and this service earns the Custodes favour among Terra's noble elite for pretty obvious reasons, and it solidifies their reputation as unwavering guardians at the Imperium's highest echelons. But while tradition has bound the Custodes for millennia, they remain resolute while ever maintaining this stoic distance from other members of humanity, and as we've said, continue to be wary of even the most loyal space marines. In their guardianship, the Custodians are everywhere throughout the Imperial Palace. For in the defense of Terra, they are the final bulwark against the horrors of the galaxy that would seek to scour and consume all. While they still stand, such a catastrophic eventuality will surely never come to pass. A term often used to describe the Custodes is that of the Talons of the Emperor, and this refers to the combined forces of the Custodian Guard and the Sisters of Silence. But for understandable reasons, this remains relatively obscure, even within the Imperium. This is because the term itself is of course a metaphorical reference to the Imperial Eagle, which represents the Imperium itself, and so when called upon, the talons of the Eagle and Emperor will descend upon their designated targets with a merciless efficiency and precision. The sight of their arrival is one that seems unbelievable for such destructive machines of war, in the sense that everything the Custodes forces will use is clad in gold oromite, be that prestigious gunships or venerable armoured transports. Each Custodian's armour, for example, is meticulously crafted to fit their individual specifications and equipped with advanced sensors, refractor field generators for maximum protection. Similarly, the Sisters of Silence don Vratine armour, which is a highly advanced technology and offers both exceptional defence and freedom of movement, said to be comparable at least to Astartes power armour. And for the Talons of the Emperor, some of the most notable chambers of Custodes that we were discussing before are as follows. Firstly, the Shadow Keepers, who are the wardens of the darkest cells within the palace, clad in sable armour melded with the darkness of their domain they patrol. They also wear rich crimson robes and pauldrons which mark their allegiance to the Shadowkeeper's shield host. And their role is to guard beneath the Emperor's palace to protect humanity from the many wondrous horrors from the Age of Old Night, locked away to safeguard the Imperium. The Shadow Keepers bear this weighty responsibility of guarding Eldritch terrors until the end of time, for they alone possess the knowledge to unlock the runic portals and understand all too well the dire consequences should these horrors be unleashed. For millennia, the Shadow Keepers kept their vigil, until the advent of the Great Rift shattered the sanctity of terror. And with the grip of chaos tightening, new abominations surfaced, some even rumoured to have escaped their confines. In response, the Shadow Keepers dispatched warriors across the galaxy, tasked with recapturing these horrors and sealing them to the vaults beneath the palace once more. And shield captains known as Lock Wardens lead the Shadow Keepers, and this is a title revered by all. Their shield captain, Borsa Thirsk, is a grim and relentless guardian serving as the current Lock Warden, and his vigilance and recent actions embody indeed the dire state of the Imperium, as he has rarely returned to Terra since the Great Rift's emergence, which speaks volumes in terms of the threats they are seeking to eliminate. As noted before, the Aqualan Shield are those who seek to protect and defend critical members of the Imperium. When the Doomscryers of the Imperial Palace, who have the ability to foresee impending calamities and identify individuals who, through their action or influence, can avert such disasters, these Chosen are granted the honour of the Aqualan Shield, an informal brotherhood within the Custodes who operate in small bands across the galaxy to safeguard their charges. Without warning, they may materialise as avatars of the Emperor's will, bestowing protection upon those deemed worthy, and these could be any from the most lowly human citizenry right up to Imperial officers. Their guardianship extends to figures beyond the Emperor, for obviously, whilst the Emperor is the centre of the Imperium, others like the High Lords to frontline preachers, regardless of status or rank, require additional security at critical moments, and these vital individuals will be watched over until at least their usefulness wanes, at which point the Aqualan Shield will silently melt away, leaving those who once held great power to now fend for themselves. Of course, then, tragedy may follow, but this is the nature of all things. Those who lose power lose status and relevance, and nobody is protected with the same level they held while still in an official office capacity or at a critical juncture. So what happens thereafter is still their own fate. Plus, it goes without saying that the Aqualan Shield will prioritise the safety of the Golden Throne above all else, but they also understand that they need a broader perspective in order to protect the Golden Throne. For those Custodes known as the Dread Host, these are the pure embodiment of the Emperor's fury. It is another obvious truth that fear is a potent tool wielded by the Imperium at large to deter adversaries both internal and external, as well as to maintain control over populations. Few comparable entities can provoke the sheer dread when the Emperor's wrath is unleashed upon his enemies. They are transported aboard a trio of pre-heresy warships known as the Moirides, and have fought against enemies thousands of times their number, who were quickly humbled by strategy, speed, and strength. Through a devastating scale of bloodshed and destruction, so renowned for this are the Dread Host that they have dissuaded hundreds of uprisings and invasions before they could even begin, by mythical reputation alone. The so-called Sanctum of a Thousand Eyes remains the fortress of the Dread Host, and it looms large over a district of the Imperial Palace, illuminated by towering electro-braziers and colossal arc lumen, said to be adorned with 500 eagle statues lining its battlements, each as large as Imperial super heavy tanks. They inspire superstition in their ability to detect disloyalty, serving as the Emperor's all-seeing eyes. Comically, this holds some truth, as each houses an array of surveillance devices and archaeotech feeding information to the Sanctum's data shrines, just one example of how Custodes seek to eradicate threats toward the Golden Throne. Then we have the Solar Watch, who are the ultimate guardians of the Imperial Realm. They stand in defense of the Sol System itself, one of humanity's most heavily fortified domains. Its wards and fortresses are treated as extensions of the Emperor's palace by the custodes, from the towering fortifications of Luna to the cloud-enshrouded bastions of Jupiter and the remote star forts of the Halo Belt. The Sol system maintains many hundreds of billions of weapons ever ready to repel any threat. Fleets of Imperial Navy ships patrol space lanes, and the custodians of the Solar Watch stand as the ultimate bulwark. Composed of several shield companies, the Solar Watch primarily secure the outer bastions of the Throne World, and they are the first line of defence for the Imperial Palace. They are seen to constantly patrol, remaining ever vigilant for signs of any and all danger, and while their jurisdiction extends across the Sol system, they maintain respectful relations with the cult Mechanicus on Mars, and would only seek to intervene there where necessary or when otherwise requested to help maintain order. The custodes, as we have said previously, can be mistaken by those who may not know any better to be a variant of Astartes. It's understandable, but aesthetics alone is entirely where such comparisons end, for their creation and genetic structural composition is vastly different, so much so as to be entirely incomparable. In actuality, it's hard to believe anybody could look upon a custodes and Astartes and believe they were anything approaching the same entity. The custodes are far more deeply rooted in the technological achievements and ancient history of the Imperium. During the Unification Wars on Old Earth, their presence can be traced back to the earliest chronicles, where inscriptions depict them as the Emperor's guardians, flanking him in moments of conquest. In subsequent conflicts such as the assault against the Morland Send Confederacy, Custodian Guard units fought with the Emperor himself and were instrumental in the controversial cull of Thunder Warriors around the time when the emergence of the first Space Marines began to occur. The Custodians are not merely the Guardians of Terror, but remain one of the most indispensable of the Imperium's military forces, for they are the killers of the Emperor's own creations. The Custodian Guard's augmentation process expands not only their physical capabilities, but also their intellect and martial skill to unparalleled levels of human genetic adaptation. Their minds are fortified with an encyclopedic knowledge of warfare and tactics, their loyalty to the Emperor imbued in their very being, down, it is said, to the genetic level, so that such feelings of duty surpass even conscious thought. Custodes aspirants, if they have survived the testing and early genetic adaptations, will undergo extensive mental conditioning, thus fortifying their psyche to withstand the further trials long ahead. Their education spans many years and a myriad of subjects, from warfare and assassination techniques to diplomacy and philosophy, ensuring their enlightenment and perspective will remain unparalleled. This comprehensive education harkens back to an era when custodians served not only as protectors, but also as counselors and companions to the Emperor. While this is used to screen out any with minds unable to stand against the millennia of horrors that await, it is also designed to ensure that custodians retain the enlightenment of the era of the Great Crusade, something rarely seen now among other forces, including the Astartes, in M41. Candidates for the custodes often originate from noble houses, and the entire transformation begins in infancy. Their flesh, minds, and souls begin a process that will leave them, should they survive, forever altered. Prospective custodes were typically said to be drawn from the sons of the Terran nobility and other families of status. It is recalled that many families even sacrificed entire generations for the potential honor of serving as custodians. Unlike Space Marines who undergo implantation after adolescence, the custodes transformation occurs at the minutest level of their genome and cellular structure, imbuing them with near immortality and psychic resilience. The full selection criteria for custodians has remained ever veiled in secrecy, as is almost everything about their origins and creation. Whether through deliberate selection or chance encounters, candidates will embark on this gulag journey of alchemical augmentation, psychological conditioning, and mimetic training. In ages past, this would have been also guided by the hand of the Emperor himself, and in the time since he ascended the Golden Throne, it is unknown who specifically oversees this process and to what degree it has changed. Very likely the custodians themselves have a role to play, and as previously noted, the Custodians and Space Marines share common form, but their functions and capabilities diverge significantly. While they both undergo profound physical transformations, surpassing natural human limits in strength, endurance, and resilience to environmental challenges, the Custodes stand notably superior in almost every aspect of their being, both mentally and physically. What they share in the process that sees them undergo such rigorous psychological and cognitive conditioning, and this redirects their focus towards aggression, objective efficiency, and the fulfillment of duties. Additionally, both are also rendered incapable of procreation as a further safeguard against such distractions. What remains are beings singular in purpose. The Astartes living engines of conquest, and the Custodian Guard relentless protectors, entities of singular, unyielding vigilance and formidable prowess. The Custodes are the pinnacle of psychophysical design. As is the norm for all transhuman warriors of the Imperium, only a fraction of potential candidates will achieve the heights of becoming a near-immortal guardian of humanity. This is often just one among many thousands. Few will even qualify for the initial stages of the Custodian creation process. But this does not necessarily mean that every prospective candidate would just perish. Many will be rejected, having been assessed as just unsuitable for whatever reason. Those who are selected must face a grueling endurance marathon of survival through many decades, as we said, of alchemical augmentation and training. Their ultimate survival far from being guaranteed. And this does echo the selection process of the Space Marines and the Grey Knights, albeit in some aspects a more pronounced degree, although candidates for the Grey Knights face some of the most arduous of application processes. Where the Custodes differ most from any of their adjacent brethren is the level of advanced alchemy and genecraft employed in their creation, being both potent and invisible. Custodes are adapted and reshaped at a deep cellular level, possibly crossing even into the realms of the metaphysical manipulation. It is likely that to produce a Custodes sees the employment of techniques and knowledge from the Dark Age of Technology, and using such methods that will be unknown and unseen by the vast majority of humans, even capable of understanding such a thing at all different levels. Each Custodian will be tailored to their strongest specific traits, which remains a testament to the Emperor's masterful concept of designing these beings. Custodians were always an extremely rare breed, and this continues through to M41. They are the last remnants of humanity's glorious age, when we had mastered all levels of science and technology, and nothing was beyond our capability. While the science used to craft the Custodes is of an ancient, forgotten, golden age, the purposes to which they are created now is for a far more barbaric and bleak era, the Age of Darkness and the Imperium, to serve as the Emperor's guard. They are stalwart defenders in the endless wars against horrors of the Immaterium and the Xenos, who seek to deluge and consume every world in the galaxy. Custodians themselves, though, never exhibit psychic powers, as even the most adept of psychers could potentially be at risk of invasion by warp entities, and such a risk no Custodian would ever be willing to take. And this is why every Custodes is additionally blessed with protections that make them less vulnerable to both the null and psychically active individual. This is what enables them also to be so powerfully paired in fighting alongside the Sisters of Silence. And in designing the Custodes, it seems that the Emperor wished for not even a singular break in that shield that was his closest bodyguards, because despite imbuing himself in their creation, he did not seem to grant them psychic ability. Perhaps this was in fact because of the Emperor's immense foresight. He knew that the Space Marines could be too easily compromised, but he needed their bulk mass of force. The Custodes, by comparison, were designed to be completely impregnable to the assaults of Chaos. Of course, in the end, we know even this was not really enough. But the Custodes, for how beautiful they are in aesthetic and presence, are ultimately designed for a singular purpose, as is almost everything the Emperor brought into being. They exist to deliver death to any being or creature that might threaten him, and this is why they are the Destroyers, the Astartes Killers. It is ever true that a Custodes compared to Space Marine is as a Space Marine to an unaugmented human. And as is often questioned of the Astartes and the Primarchs, the greatest question many would wish to consider is, are they really human at all through the sheer scale of their transhuman augmentation and genetic manipulation? And if that is said about the Astartes, what does it say about the Custodes? It of course had to be noted that the office of Captain General stands as one of the Imperium's paramount military positions. They bear the weighty responsibility of defending the Sol system, Terra, the Imperial Palace, and ultimately the Golden Throne and the Emperor himself. For many, an unenviable task. As the master of the Adeptus Custodes, the Captain General commands the 10,000 and will sit among the esteemed High Lords of Terra, although not necessarily being a part of that. They will lead the most pivotal military campaigns, and they must display martial prowess akin to the ancient Primarchs of the Emperor's creation. In the millennia since the Great Crusade, only 17 Captain General have held this esteemed title. Most would meet their end in battle or vanishing mysteriously, as seems to happen quite a lot in the Imperium. The current Captain General, Trajan Valorous, is hailed as one of the greatest warriors since the Emperor's era. Valorous's remarkable feats include 2 successful blood games within his first decade of service, a testament to his incredible strategic prowess. Rising from the Companions to the rank of Shield Captain, Valorous's proactive approach led him to safeguard the Imperium from emergent threats across the Sol system and beyond. He carries, of course, masterfully crafted artifacts that include the Watcher's Axe, which crackles with golden lightning, and the Castellan Plate, a suit of powered armour of unparalleled protection. Armed as well with the Moment Shackle, this relic of ancient technology is said to even be able to manipulate temporal energy to his advantage, turning the tide of any battle, which is truly a relic of a different age of humanity. Under Valorous's leadership, the Custodes have overseen this surge in the blood games, fortification of warp routes, and eradicated innumerable hidden cults in preemptive cleansing campaigns. His extensive spy network and covert strikes have annihilated numerous threats to the Golden Throne, and some speculate that his foresight, perhaps aided by that enigmatic power of the Moment Shackle, has enabled him to prepare the Custodes for the greatest challenges to the new Imperium. Whether true or not, it remains clear that Valorous's qualities position him as an exemplary leader for an era defined by unprecedented chaos and unpredictable disasters against the worlds of humanity and the ever-hungry Xenos foes. And then, of course, we come to Constantine Valdor. Valdor was the first Captain General of the Adeptus Custodes, and he is known for being perhaps the most formidable figure in both martial skill, dedication, and loyalty to the Emperor in Imperial history. Despite this, he has also remained a somewhat hidden character, for which there are obvious reasons, but it speaks volumes as to how the Custodes have long been overlooked in the lore of 40k, and Valdor's significance is no exception. This being despite his pivotal role in the Unification Wars and his esteemed position within the Emperor's inner circle. I have, since its arrival, long recommended that Birth of the Imperium is one of the very best starting novels for anybody in 40k. Confusing, maybe, but an excellent grounding in many critical aspects of the verse and characters. One of the most noteworthy and storied aspects of Valdor, though, beyond his personal character, is his weapon, which is not entirely unusual in the galaxy of the 41st millennium, but I think it could be fair to say that Valdor's unique weapon is potentially one of the most powerful and most critical in the entire lore of 40k. While at a surface level it appears as a guardian spear like all Custodes weapons, it is far more than such a tool. It was gifted to him by the Emperor himself, and it is known as the Apollonian Spear. This spear possesses extraordinary abilities, for it allows Valdor to understand any individuals he kills with it at a profound level, or even who he strikes and penetrates with it. Each strike of the spear grants Valdor insight into their lives. It connects their very spirit, their being, to him, and this unique feature enables Valdor to uncover truths about his foes, their activities, what an entire faction is doing, which makes him not just a formidable combatant, but an incredibly critical keystone of the Imperium, or at least he was. Additionally, the spear serves as a reminder to Valdor of the humanity and the complexity of those who he confronts in battle. This was really another vital aspect of it, and perhaps why the Emperor really gave it to him, because this enabled him to temper his actions against a deeper understanding of individuals' motivations. The origins of Constantine Valdor themselves are very shrouded in mystery. Some say he was born amidst the turmoil of Old Night, the Age of Strife, entirely believable, but beyond this, the origins of Valdor are just veiled in obscurity. Some accounts have suggested he was plucked from the ranks of Terran nobility, again possible. Others claim he emerged from the Crucible of Battle as a paragon of martial prowess in the Unification era. It was also said that his original parents met their demise at the hands of the Emperor, who mobilized entire armies to locate and retrieve him, again, very believable. Valdor's own recollections of his pre-service days under the Emperor are very scant, but he himself remains uncertain whether he was, say, the initial experiment of the Custodes or just the first successful creation. What we do know is that Valdor came into existence as a Custodes prior to the Unification Wars as he served in that time, notably again the Battle of Maul and Sen, which of course would then culminate when the Thunder Warriors were themselves slaughtered by the Custodes. Again, the details specifically about who made that call are a little vague. Valdor emerged as a key figure in Terra's ruling triumvirate alongside the Emperor and Malkador. Valdor's surprise at Malkador's revelation about the Primarch's survival after they were dispersed throughout the galaxy reflects his personal skepticism about their potential corruption. Valdor was never a big fan of the Emperor's other transhuman creations. And of course, Valdor's concerns about the Primarchs ultimately turned out to be entirely accurate, or by degrees anyway. Before the rediscovery of the Primarchs, Valdor had actually advocated for raising mortal armies who themselves would have led the Great Crusade under Custodian leadership, eschewing reliance on the Primarchs, and that would have been a fascinating alternative timeline to imagine, and one wonders how things might have gone differently at the end period of the Great Crusade in that situation. Even now, though, through to the contemporary period of Imperial history, few figures stand as large and ever-present as Constantine Valdor. He remains revered as the first Captain General of the Adeptus Custodes, but his legacy is shrouded in myth and mystery, as we speak about always when it comes to the Imperium. But regardless of his actual origins, Valdor's ascension to the rank of Captain General would see him become not only the Supreme Commander of the Emperor's personal guard, but also the complete embodiment of his will. His leadership would shape the Custodes into the force they would become and remain through the Heresy and to the Imperium in M41. And truly, Valdor's stature and abilities were unmatched as a Custodes. Some have even speculated that he might be a form of Primarch himself or some test iteration. For there is much that is unknown about the early development of the Emperor's grand vision for galactic conquest. Certainly there are prototype Astartes, so why not prototype Primarchs? But to be clear, this remains entirely in the realm of the speculative. Beyond his unparalleled skill, another notable aspect, although far from surprising, is Valdor's character in the sense of his unwavering dedication to duty, even in the face of moral ambiguity. This was exemplified in his role as the Emperor's ultimate protector, and his willingness to pursue victory at any cost at any time. Yet beneath this facade of loyalty lies a complex individual grappling with the weight of his responsibilities, and this is seen in Birth of the Imperium. While on the surface he appears as an individual of shining golden example, he also is a weapon of destruction wielded by the Emperor to do whatever is needed, wherever it is needed. During the tumultuous events of the Horus Heresy, Valdor grows more to us as a character, but he also retains this extremely cold, stoic facade, certainly as disconnected as Custodes always are to a degree, certainly as disconnected as Rogal Dorn. And his greatest role is seen during the Siege of Terra. But he also participated in the Battle of Prospero, the homeworld of the Thousand Suns. He also oversaw the deployment of the first execution team seen in the Imperium. That was the mission of assassins to attempt to execute Horus Lupercal, and whilst that ultimately failed, it did reveal further information about Erebus to the Loyalists. Ultimately, Valdor would fight in the Siege of Terror, his initial involvement less notable perhaps and spectacular than some other figures, for he would only come into full view as the Emperor began his teleportation attack upon Horus's ship, the Vengeful Spirit. However, this is also when Valdor would be famously separated from the Emperor in the most critical of times. He would slaughter through hordes of demons and then come to an extremely critical moment, not just in the lore of Valdor, but in the lore of 40k, the Custodes and the Imperium. During the release of the final books in the Siege of Terror and Heresy series, it had long been speculated by a great many people in the community that Valdor would use his spear and strike either Horus, or many wanted to imagine some great twist where he would connect the spear with the Emperor himself, and in so doing learn some abhorrent, unfathomable truth. And I would say this is a lesson to always scale your expectations. For in the end, what was revealed was far more, I will say, milk toast. Valdor encounters who? It's Abaddon. And as Valdor attempts to strike him, the first captain grabs and stops the spear. But it still cuts, and this enables Valdor to see the next 10,000 years. It enables him to see the galaxy of endless war, he sees chaos undivided, and at the head of this he sees the Despoiler. In the aftermath of the final battle with Horus, with the Emperor now sent to the Golden Throne, Valdor is left to consider the implications of the vision seen by the spear. He is clearly vacant and disillusioned, shaken by the realization that the Imperium will be nothing as the Emperor had sought to achieve, and will now become this broken, stagnated, religion-focused civilization that barely maintains its ability to defend itself. Sometime after the Heresy, around the same time as the disappearance of Leman Russ, Valdor would also disappear without a trace. Now, pretty sizable spoiler here, so I will note if you're reading the Eisenhorn or the Beckwin series. The reasoning people expected some grand resolution when it came to Valdor is directly related to the revelation that at the end of the Beckwin novel series, which is part of the whole narrative which continued on from Eisenhorn and Ravenor. Now there is a lot that I would have to outline to really state the full situation here, and I will probably do that in a different video, but essentially we discover through a deciphered hexagrammatic cipher that a mysterious figure known as the King in Yellow is in fact Valdor. Interestingly enough also, The King in Yellow is a book by Robert Chambers, and that may have some involvement here, but again I'll speak about that in a different video. The King in Yellow is described as inhabiting a mysterious pocket dimension known as the City of Dust, and from here he commands formidable resources. He is an enemy of both Gregor Eisenhorn and Gideon Ravenor, who have battled him for many years. And one of the reasons why I was yet still to cover this is that there is almost nothing known about the motivations and intentions of this figure. But it remains one of the most thrilling unknown storylines within the lore of 40k, because its implications are in fact so significant. It's likely why that series has not released any new material until after the Siege of Terror series was concluded, to set us up with the fact that Valdor would emerge from the Heresy with this knowledge that the next 10,000 years would be war and horror for the Imperium. And that can absolutely twist and distort and focus the mind of an individual, the sense of knowing what is to come and then making a plan for what you believe has to happen, regardless of what anybody else around you is saying. It really strengthens that focus, that spirit, not unlike what you see actually in the Dune series with Paul Atreides. Now we all know that there were several scenarios surrounding the end of the Heresy as espoused by the Cabal, whereby there were really no good scenarios for humanity, but they still chose and sought the destruction of chaos. They failed, but the alternative was not considerably better. Now additionally, without heavily getting into the details of the Emperor, the different scenarios, the whole Dark King, which is actually pretty straightforward, I don't know why people make a big deal about that, but anyway, it seems that Valdor basically concluded that with his knowledge, he now would take matters into his own hands, like I say, with that clarity of vision. In this, one of his goals remains to obtain the true name of the Emperor in order to obtain power over him. And that alone raises a gigantic question mark about his intentions. Does he seek to continue on with the Emperor's plan, try to save humanity, or does he believe the Emperor has made a catastrophic mistake and he now seeks to take power for himself? This has apparently led him in searches from the planet of the sorcerers to the Black Library. Eisenhorn has pledged to hunt down and destroy this king before he completes his ultimate objective. But the King in Yellow has amassed an army of cloned blanks, winged space marines, possibly custodians. It's entirely unknown though what his greater plans are, and it's presumed that they are a grave threat to the Imperium. The custodians, during the final battles of the Heresy, were shown to perhaps not be corrupted, but at least made malleable by the power of Chaos. So it remains an open question with Valdor. Has he been corrupted? Is he just misguided? Or is he orchestrating a grand scheme for the greater good of the Imperium? But the emergence of the King in Yellow, the Yellow King, heralds an arguably more consequential event in 40k than the conclusion of the Heresy, because it's very possible that Valdor holds this ambitious goal, as do some among the Inquisition, to seek the resurrection of the Emperor and also combat the forces of Chaos. He holds a collection of pariahs. It's said even he holds some Enuncia, that is the devastatingly powerful primordial language shown periodically throughout 40k. It's one of the most powerful things in 40k. With everything happening in the galaxy in the contemporary time, it's very possible that Valdor, if his intentions are still loyal to the Imperium, seeks both vengeance and is looking to somehow challenge the Dominion of Chaos. Perhaps like other factions also, attempting a means by which to seal off the warp from reality itself. It is worth remembering though, that just because Valdor should theoretically remain gene-coded into unwavering loyalty to the Emperor, Valdor's interpretation of what loyalty to the Emperor means may differ significantly from the prevailing beliefs within the current Imperium, not to mention his whole psyche and mentality being twisted by that vision of the Imperium for 10,000 years. So to that end, it's worth recalling the cold and disconnected character that Valdor displayed during the earliest days of the Imperium. He is basically called to his face an inhuman robotic killer, and Valdor basically says, sure, why not, and just slaughters this individual anyway. And that was directly representative, seen in the indiscriminate slaughter of the Thunder Warriors, the hypocrisy, the complete control over all of humanity that the Emperor sought at all levels. The question is, with the cataclysmic events taking place with the Great Rift, the incursions and spread of Chaos, Kaul, the Necron, the Inari, and the supposedly rising power of the Emperor, will the full arc of Valdor see the resurrection of the Emperor, the ascension of the Emperor to full god status, the ascension of Valdor? Hopefully, we will not have to wait too long to discover, but also remember what I said earlier about scaling expectations. I think the escalation of the Emperor to a whole new level of existence might be considerably too much to hope for. But Valdor emerging with a grand plan that has profound consequences for the existing Imperium, the Custodes, the returning Primarchs, anything is possible. The Custodes have, for 10,000 years and beyond, stood sentinel by the Emperor's side. They're entrusted with an unfathomable duty for mortal men, and now seek to finally confront those who harboured designs to the Master of Mankind's demise. Like a heavily coiled spring unleashed, they have now embraced the mantle of war with unyielding zeal and fervour in the Era Indomitus. Tradition has always dictated that when a custodian falls, terror mourns, and the resounding toll of the Bell of Lost Souls echoes in lamentation. Yet in this new age of conflict, that mournful knell reverberates with alarming frequency. But a custodian's descent into death is never swift nor worthless, for they wield the finest armaments crafted within the Imperium, the venerable arsenals of the Imperial Palace. And despite the age of the weaponry, this remains formidable. Their armoured phalanxes, forged in antiquity, retain a potency unmatched by contemporary counterparts. Their craft's machine spirits imbued with a belligerence and strength that defies replication. Gilded gunships soar through the void, relics of bygone wars meticulously preserved and anointed with sacred oils. Should a hasteful intervention be necessary, the custodians invoke the God Strike pattern teleportarium, materializing amidst the fray in cascades of golden radiance. Within ancient starships, translocation bays suffused with sanctified incense facilitate rapid deployment, even accommodating immense Contemptor dreadnoughts ready to unleash unparalleled scales of devastation upon the enemies of humanity. The newfound aggression espoused in the Era Indomitus is self-evident, though, for while immortal in essence, even the custodians succumb to physical scars that can impair their prowess. Cybernetic replacements of the highest fabrication quality are still unable to match the supernatural vitality of their genomantic flesh and blood. Others find their mental precision fading, reflexes dull, and more than ever, custodians are fragmented into the shadows of the galaxy, shrouded in those hooded black robes, continuing as the eyes of the Emperor, serving him from afar, ready to unleash the wrath of the Emperor upon unsuspecting enemies. In the tumult of the Great Rift's emergence, though, these eyes of the Emperor have become more proactive as well, venturing into Imperium Nihilus to confront threats and protect Imperial enclaves. Some have even taken on the roles of feudal lords here, while rumours swirl of a band of golden armoured warriors known as the Eyes Unblinded. In the wake of the Horus Heresy, the Adeptus Custodes, once bound solely to the defence of Terra and the Emperor's Sanctum, found themselves entrenched in a state of eternal vigilance. Millennia passed in solemn duty, their golden armour becoming synonymous with the indomitable spirit of Terra's guardians. But after their immense period of isolation, rarely stepping outside the Sol system, as the galaxy convulsed with the birth of the Great Rift, the Custodes sensed a shift in the celestial tides. They understood they could no longer be mere sentinels, and with the resurrected instruction of Primarch Robute Gilliman's decree, the Custodes embarked on a radical departure from tradition, a paradigm shift that resonated to the very core of the role they would play in the Era Indomitus. Stepping forth from the confines of their ancestral home, Custodes, like avenging angels, ventured beyond the boundaries of the Sol system. Their mission, to eradicate threats to humanity wherever they were found. And this newfound freedom unleashed the Custodes' pent-up wrath, unexpectedly upon the galaxy's most malevolent denizens. They were no longer confined or restrained to reactive defence. Instead, they would embrace proactive engagement, striking preemptively wherever the tendrils of the Xenos and Chaos threats that sought to scour and ensnare the Imperium's soul were found. Where they were once confined to the hallowed halls of the Imperial Palace, now they blazed like a supernova across the cosmos, illuminating the darkest corners and striking with the unconstrained fury of the Emperor. As Custodes' shield companies traverse the stars, their impact has reverberated throughout the Imperium. Where once their absence from Terra might have sparked panic and spelled doom, now it heralded hope. The sight and presence of such individuals stepping out throughout the galaxy was a fiery beacon of defiance against the encroaching darkness. The Custodes remain not only symbols of the Emperor and the Imperium, but of humanity's resilience, inspiring mortal men and Astartes alike to stand firm against the galactic tempest that breaks over even the most formidable bastions. Custodes in the Indomitus era have transcended warfare and embodied a resurgence of Imperial might, diplomacy, and strategic oversight. Their presence is a declaration that the Imperium would never stumble nor falter in the face of adversity. On the contrary, with their relentless pursuit of the Emperor's will, the Custodes have forged a path that dares to consider their own redemption. Their existence continues to be this testament of enduring strength displayed by humanity despite the ceaseless turmoil of the abyssal maw consuming worlds of humanity throughout the galaxy. In their wake, the Custodes leave not just the ashes and bones of vanquished foes, but they also sow the seeds of renewed hope. A promise still that the light of the Imperium cannot be extinguished, that it will endure, prevail, and remain stalwart, unbroken, and eternal.